It's all about the macro productions.
Lashback Fridays here on Macroaggressions, taking you back to March 30th, 2024, making yourself resilient in an uncertain world with Curtis Stone. If you want to turn some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency into actual money, then check out my friend Tony Arterburn with Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. Set up a monthly buy with Wolfpack subscription as low as $50, or roll over your IRA and 401k into physical precious metals. You can also use your Bitcoin to make purchases. Go to macroaggressions.gold, promo code macro for free silver. Now please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for London.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, Macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you. We appreciate it. We know you have a lot of choices out there. If you like the show, consider giving us a 5-star review and maybe writing a little something. I don't really care all that much, but the algorithm seems to like that the best. If you want to connect with me directly, the new website is macroaggressions.io. It's a good place to find out all the stuff that I'm up to. And a huge thanks to the sponsors. They make this show happen. Legal Shield has been in business in the United States and Canada for the last 50 years. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. They'll get you access to a high-powered attorney in your area for $1 a day, $30 a month. It's very reasonable, especially considering how everything else seems to get so expensive. I'm not really quite sure how they've been able to keep the prices down, but they have. If you're interested in learning more about this, we have a website. It's specific to this show. You can go to www.don'tgetpushedaround.com and find out all of the items that Legal Shield provides you. You can get your last will and testament done, your medical directive, financial power of attorney. You can knock out all those things immediately. I would suggest you do it in the first month. Make sure you more than get your money's worth on that. It'll pay itself off for the next couple of years with just that. But if you're somebody that runs a small business, they have a small business plan. If you are somebody that carries a gun, they have licensing and documentation for that. If you need ID Shield, they've got that as well. So best thing to do, go to the website, read up about it, see what you think. If you like it, pull the trigger. If not, that's cool. Don'tgetpushedaround.com is the place to find that. And also to our friends at Chemical Free Body that are making supplements that actually work. A very novel concept. Imagine that coming out of business school. You write a business plan where you're like, I have an idea for a supplement business. I'm going to make the supplements actually work. They're like, what a great idea. No one else is doing that. Chemical Free Body's doing that. I've been on their Green 85 for 4 years now. It's just a scoop of the green powder, mix it with water, drink it in the morning, and you're done. That's it. That's really it. You have no more excuses. If this is the year that you finally decide you're going to take control of your health, well, good. It's better better late than never, I guess. And the only person that can make this decision is you. So if you're tired of feeling gross, maybe you want to lose a little weight or you want to have some energy, go to chemicalfreebody.com and read up about all the products that they have. If you find something that you like on your way out, the discount code is macro. Well, now that the business is out of the way, we can get down to the party. Well, I was excited. Anarchapulco 2024 is always just, I mean, it's always a great time. This year, I think it might've been the best one ever. And in advance of that, we had a lot of the speakers that were coming into town, and I was excited that I was going to get a chance to talk with them. And one of them was Curtis Stone. So I am pleased to introduce you to the head of freedomfarmers.com, ladies and gentlemen, from Canada, Curtis Stone. Hey, Curtis, good to see you. How are you?
So good. Happy to be here, Charlie.
Did you sleep in the pod on the way, back?
I did. I slept in the pod twice.
I slept on the way there in Mexico. You have to get to Anarchapulco through Mexico City. And because of the devastation of the Acapulco area and the airport in particular, the flights in and out of Acapulco are very limited. And so this year I had to stay overnight in Mexico City. A lot of us kind of did the just limited flights, and you could stay at one of the hotels down the street, which is totally reasonable and rational and normal. But if you're like us two lunatics, you could say, oh, they have pods at the Mexico City airport. Let's try that out. You know, a Klaus Schwab experience. Exactly. I thought it was kind of practical. I got to be honest. I mean, I wouldn't want to live in one. Don't get me wrong, but if you've got I got in at midnight. I had an 8:30 flight the next morning, and I thought, well, I need to sleep somewhere. I'm either going to sleep on these chairs here in the lobby, or I'm going to, maybe I'll sleep in this pod. And it was weird, and I did take a video of it, and it was fine. But I thought it was pretty convenient. What'd you think?
It was. Yeah, it was weird. But it was very convenient. Yeah. I missed that first flight. I was supposed to sit with you on that flight to Acapulco. So I was really bummed that I missed it. I missed it by 2 minutes. The customs in Mexico is always a gong show. So is what it is. And so I had a 6-hour layover. So I went and slept in the pod for 4-5 hours. And then, on the way back, I had a 7-hour layover. So I slept in it again because it is practical, because I don't really want to get in a cab and go, you know, it's too much hassle. I'd rather just stay there at the airport, and then, you know, it's easy transition. So yeah, it was practical. Not as cheap as you'd think it would be. That was like 200 pesos an hour. Yeah. I think when I did that 7-hour layover, it was like $70. It was like,
I think was about the same. I think, I got a place to take a shower, use the, you know, you have a private bathroom, you have your own little pod. I had internet access, so I did some work, a little bit of, I answered some emails in the middle of the night and did those things, went to sleep, and
totally.
But I couldn't help but feel like I was in some, like, I envisioned that's sort of what they put you in for the trip to Mars, you know, and they wake you up like 18 months in, and you're like, oh, I'm so tired, I've been in this pod.
It is bizarre. And all the black light and stuff. You go in and it's like they're like on shelves, right? There's two layers and you climb up. It is bizarre. But yeah, it is practical at the same time, because it's a big airport. And so to get out of there, and, you know, things are so unreliable in Mexico in general. So it's to leave the airport is just risky as far as I'm concerned.
What'd you think of Anarchapulco?
Oh, dude, it was incredible. I'm so glad that I ended up going. You know, Jeff invites me for so many years. I've known Berwick for a long time. And it finally worked out to go. The reason I all of a sudden decided to go is because my snow melted, and we live in a fairly cold climate. And I'm always hesitant to get off the homestead in the winter because we're off grid. You know, we're really out here. And there's a lot of work with the snow. And so I figured, well, the snow's melted. I texted Jeff. I was like, hey, is there happen to be an extra spot? He's like, yeah, there is. And I was stoked because you were going to be there and a bunch of guys I knew, David Avocado Wolf and Alex Eck and Kaufman were going to be there, and Dave Weiss and all these guys. So I was like, I got to go. And so that was 5 days prior to the event. They threw me on the bill. I scheduled a workshop, which worked out great. But then check this out. The day that I got there, it snowed for 36 hours straight here. My wife and kids were completely like socked in. She couldn't even leave because our driveway is but a sixth of a mile long, or 60% of a mile long, kilometer. And so without me doing the snow management, she couldn't go. So they were just hunkering down. And then she left the Tesla plugged into the off-grid system, completely drained the batteries. She had no power for 12 hours. It was kind of a good test, you know, when I'm not here, how to manage it. I troubleshooted her through things. She made it work. So it was all good. But yeah, the event was incredible. The lineup of speakers was great. The vibes were really high. Really good, positive vibes all around. And yeah, what a great place to be, you know. I wonder if they'll want to do it in another Mexican city, though. I mean, I know Jeff lives in Acapulco or partly, so I get it. But I mean, wouldn't Puerto Vallarta be so much more convenient, maybe? I don't know. Because the layover is a real drag getting there. You know, it's like, for me, it was 24 hours of transit to get there.
I know.
So it's... bringing my wife and kids is just forget about
well,
it, you know?
Well, it's so funny because I'm going to Tokyo for my buddy's 50th birthday in a couple of weeks. And the flight time, the travel time for me from Denver to Tokyo is half the time it took me to get to Acapulco. I'm going to Vancouver, and then from Vancouver, I'm going to Tokyo. It's like, and I've got like an hour layover in Vancouver. So there's not much waiting around, but there's just no fast way to get to Acapulco. But once you get there, boy, I'll tell you, to find all those people, like you, the people that you mentioned, I don't know where you're going to get that group. Just, you know, anywhere,
I know.
Because it's such an unusual, I mean, it's one thing if you have like a UFO conference and then you get all the UFO guys, but this conference covers so many different topics that you get people that aren't familiar with each other's work. Maybe somebody who's in more of like the healing, self-healing space doesn't know anything about like, crypto or something, you know, and they could get a chance to interact. So there's a lot of cross-pollination that's happening at the event, which I always like. I come back, you know, with interesting stories and people that I've met that are fantastic and great new and I'll tell you what the theme was for me this year, just from talking to people that were out, not even necessarily speakers so much as just the attendees that were there. I kept running into people from Canada that were telling me their stories of escaping. One guy like was in tears explaining his escape story. And then I've had another one was a husband and wife that found me, and they'd moved to Mexico, but it was the same thing. I said, well, like when you say you escaped, like describe that. Did you like, this one guy's like, I left my farm and all of my animals behind because they were going to put me in prison, and I left.
What?
And I was like, holy shit. Yeah. He was other side of from you. He was more north of Montreal, but there were authorities that were going around looking for certain people that were talking out against, vaccines in particular.
Quebec got crazy. Quebec was the worst part in Canada. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And so when you did your presentation, your workshop, I should say, not the presentation. So there's the presentation that's sort of for everyone. And then there's the additional workshops that people can sign up for as sort of like an a la carte item to their Acapulco experience.
Yep.
And you were doing one. And I had a friend, Dr. Ella, who went through your workshop as well. And she, it's same thing in that area of Montreal. Was your workshop pretty specific to Canadians?
Canadians definitely got the most value out of it because I kind of explained to them a lot of the things that I do, that we have to be careful about talking about publicly. It wasn't because so much of the law in Western law is universal because it's all based on commerce. So the Uniform Commercial Code, all this stuff, when you really trace it back, comes from the City of London. The Vatican ultimately is then through the City of London, and all of our birth certificates and all those bonds are all there. But Canada has its own way of facilitating. It's very different than the United States because we only have a de facto corporation here. We don't have, the U.S. has the United States of America in title case, and it has the United States in all caps, which is Washington, D.C., which is a corporation. and then everybody's registered through there. So Canada's are different. But I went through a lot of Canadian specific stuff, and I've, you know, connecting with a lot of those people up here now and helping them out further, because it is, you know, people, the thing is with a lot of this stuff, and I don't want to take our conversation in this particular way if you don't want to go there or whatever, but is we're freer than we think we are. And this is a thing that a lot of people just don't understand because they just simply don't read the law. Like, really. One example, when the mask mandates came out in all over Canada, every province had their own different version of them. And here's an example of how the remedy is often right in plain sight and people just don't even read past the press release. Because during COVID, what we saw, especially for people like myself who pay attention to the law, and I ignore all the hype, I go straight to the signal. And so we had a press release. So the media comes out and says there's a mask mandate. And then they have a press release literally that says what it is. You can click the hyperlink in there that'll take you directly to the mandate. So you click on that and you go to Article 4. It says right there, it stipulates specifically, if you have a medical exemption, if you have a medical reason not wear a mask, you don't have to wear a mask, period. They didn't say for this and this reason. So right there on the front page, Article 4, the remedy is right there. People just don't read. And you can imagine too, in an era of TikTok and Twitter and short form thought processes and instant gratification, that is even more true than it has been in the last 100 years. But it is amazing to me how people just don't read past the hype. And I do. And so I have found that I love living here, and I've lived a very free lifestyle. And I could have moved to the US years ago. I could have moved to Mexico. I had the privilege of, you know, being an online entrepreneur, have passive income and such. But I stayed here because what I tell people, it's the devil I know versus the devil I don't. So I prefer the devil I know.
Well, and it's been a real, you know, listen, I mean, for a lot of people that grew up in the United States and Canada had never really even been a thought. As kids, like, oh, I'm going to grow up and then escape here. It didn't feel tyrannical. Maybe it's because you're a kid. Maybe just because things got weird recently. But now, all of a sudden, it is, you know, the topic of conversation is, well, where are you going to go when things get crazy? And people assume that you need to leave where you're going. And like you said, the devil that you know would be staying in Canada. The devil that you don't know would be going to Mexico. And I know that there are a lot of people that have relocated from Canada and the United States to Mexico because I meet them every year at an Acapulco. I meet these people. If you've got to stay, how do you stay? What's the best way? Is that to just, like you said, get comfortable or get yourself to a position where you're not making decisions based on the hype that you hear in the media, because the hype is designed to get you to spiral out of control, but you instead, as you say, just go straight to the source and look at the law and see how bad things really are. Is that the solution to this? Is to get honest with what the reality is?
Partly, but also the easiest. Well, whether something's easy or hard really comes down to somebody's individual context. And I would say it's a multifold strategy. For myself, it was number one, get out of the cities. Because as you know, living in Colorado, Denver is a liberal hellhole. You know, yes. I've been there. So Vancouver is the same here. Toronto, Montreal, all these cities, they're all liberal. And so number one is get out of the cities. You can move to smaller towns, which are much more conservative. Canada, geographically, in terms of its politics, is very much like the United States. Outside of the cities, it's salt of the earth, country folk, Christian, conservative, you know, good old farm boys, really, and bushmen, you know, guys who work in the bush. And that was my past. So I'd say number one is get out of the cities, get into the country, get into a place where there's less space or where there's more space and less people. Number one. And then two, start looking at the law. You know, people always ask me, because people always think that there's a book for dummies, like Canadian law for dummies or whatever it is. They say, what do I need to read? I just say, literally read the law. So if there's a mandate that's coming your way that you don't like, read the damn thing. So right now there's this thing that's Bill C-36. Everybody in the media is freaking out about this thing. It's this new free, it's a new anti-free speech BS. It's all woke jargon. However, Most of these bills that they put out don't even make it pass through the Canadian Charter. And it was the same with the mask stuff with COVID. There was one that came out, Jordan Peterson got famous for it when he was coming up in 2016. I think it was Bill C-16. And it was another free speech thing about, you know, if you misgender somebody, you know, this could be a human rights violation, right? Nonsense. Nobody's really been prosecuted for that. And also during COVID, anybody that got fines, if they knew the tiniest shred of little bit of the law and they challenged that fine, they threw them all out. So a lot of this stuff is just smoke and mirrors. And it's the same thing with all the World Economic Forum stuff. Oh, have you read the latest thing that the World Economic Forum says? Like, I can't keep up with all this nonsense. Because it's just truth or rabbit holes, I think. I think we're in an era fundamentally where they have the ability, now that we no longer have mainstream media, which was sort of a singular source of propaganda, now we have this really diversified propaganda where they can have AI micromanaging all these other subsects. And if you think about ChatGPT or Grok or any of these things, if you use them, I mean, just imagine the things that it's spitting out for you, but it's doing to 100 million people at the same time. Think about the micromanaging you could do on a sort of a psychological operations level. And so I think we're in an era right now where they're just throwing so much shit at the wall to see what sticks. And the New World Order has always done that. Let's throw shit at the wall to see what sticks and run with that. They still do that. But now they can machine gun assault it and let people run in all these ways, and then they can micromanage them. So I think that's kind of where we're at, is there's just so much BS and so much hype over the signal that it's hard to believe anything anymore.
It really is. And we're moving into a weird era where we've got deepfake technology on the video side of things, where, you know, it used to be like, well, show me the video of him doing it. Now it's like, well, that doesn't even hold up anymore.
Yeah.
Show me the audio. Give me the audio. Let me hear the audio of him saying this on a hot mic or on a phone call. Well, that can be manipulated too. So now we're in like a world where anything goes, and you can just, as a smokescreen or defense for your bad behavior, you can just say, oh, well, I'm sure that was artificially generated. I didn't do anything like that, and walk off. And then everyone goes, well, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. So it feels very dangerous. Like we're in a, I don't know, like you said, because of the advances in artificial intelligence, they can sort of customize the propaganda to fit
you.
If they know where you go, they know what sites you like, they know what you're into. And I would say that, you know, listen, if you're running, you know, if you're a company like Google or somebody that has browsers and you know where people are going, that's fed into something. It's valuable on some level to them. And of course, if it stays in the world of targeted advertising, where it's like, well, we want to find the people that might be more likely to buy this pair of shoes. The marketing major in me that worked at an ad agency, I can see that and go, I can sort of understand it. Maybe don't love the lack of privacy, but I can understand where they're going with it. If you're just trying to sell me shoes. But we know it never stays that way, right? It goes beyond selling you shoes. Now they're trying to sell you an idea or a concept or socialism or whatever. But so do we go off? How do we defend against that? If we recognize that it's coming, and do we, I mean, James Corbett's done a lot of work on salt your information. When they ask you for a birthday, put in some random birthday. He was talking about how on Skype, he all of a sudden he got all these people sending him like happy birthday messages when it wasn't his birthday. And he had decided it was because he had given Skype an incorrect date for his birthday. And then everyone that was on Skype saw it and they were like, oh, happy birthday, James. He's like, it's not my birthday. So do we salt the information? Is that how we get away? Do we turn into the Amish? Like, where's the happy medium for this?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's somewhere in between. I mean, I'm certainly there. And I often wonder if we're just going to have to turn everything off turn everything off at one point. Because, you know, right now, things are still okay. But these elites, they tell us what they're going to do all the time. They tell us and they publish documents. I've been reading these documents for almost 20 years. And so, yeah, I wonder, man. I mean, I'm kind of just making hay while the sun shines as far as being online. But I do wonder if there's going to be a time where we're not really going to have a choice but to turn things off. Because if you can think about as you kind of outlined there, how the propaganda can trick people on such a micro level now that it might get to a point where you just can't even really go online. And of course, that's where they're going to sell us the digital ID, right? That's the Hegelian dialectic right there, problem, reaction, solution. They're creating the problem and then they're going to offer that solution. And so the only way to get online secure is to have your digital ID. So I think that's what's in the mix at some point. Though I'm not a total dystopian because I have been on the truther path for 20 years. I'm not a dystopian as far as thinking that they're going to come and round me up. Because for one, they don't say that. And they do, they explicitly do the things that they say they're going to do. They have to give us notice. And there's some deep reasons for that. You could go down a philosophical rabbit hole on it, but they do tell us what they're going to do. So I'm not worried about that. I think for the most part, they're going to let people like us go. If you're willing to not take all the bait that they put out for you, and you're steadfast and you're willing to kind of stay grounded and centered, I think we'll be able to coexist to a certain point. Though, you know, if you go back to Agenda 21 and the whole idea of the megacities and the rewilding projects, I mean, it's pretty explicit there that all the infrastructure of the state is going to exist in the cities, and the cities are going to become UN sanctuary cities. So they're going to subvert the national sovereignty of the nation state, and you're going to see cities like probably, you know, Winnipeg and Edmonton and New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles. Boom, they're all going to become UN super cities, and then they're going to start pulling resources away from the country, and they're already doing it. I can tell you on a local level, I have witnessed things, reduction of services, snow removal. They have a guy, a friend of mine, was in the local bar here not too long ago and was sitting next to a dude and brought up, struck up conversation. And he asked the guy what he was doing in town. He said he was a private contractor working for the government of British Columbia who was driving around one of those highway-worthy backhoes and loaders. And he was driving around the forestry service roads, pulling out culverts off the roads. Why would you do that? It's complete sabotage, because if you pull the culverts out, whenever the spring melt happens, all the roads wash out. So they're sabotaging the forestry service roads right now here in southern British Columbia. Whoa. So they want us pushed into these mega cities, sleeping in pods, as you and I both know, and they don't want us in the country. And so if you're going to stay in the country, you got to be pretty self-reliant and autonomous.
Yeah. Well, that's what you do.
That's what I do.
Freedomfarmers.com is where people need to go. Now, I come out of 25 years of real estate experience and mostly in new home sales. But I've got to say, I am fascinated with your process for picking out homesteads. And I want to talk to you about what makes not all property is the same, as we know. Some are better than others. What are you looking for? Like, what are the deal killers that are automatic disqualification when you're looking at land? And what are some of the things that it's like, I've got to have this. If I don't have this, it's not even on the table.
That's such a good question. And it is, as a realtor, you know this too, because it is about the deal killer. Like you want to identify the threat right out of the gate so that you don't waste your time looking at a property that, and this is the thing, and rural real estate is really difficult because, hey, I got to drive 2 hours to go show a property, right? And so as you probably know too, realtors are generally, you know, in the same category as used car salesmen and lawyers. Like they're, you know, generally speaking, it's an easy thing to get into. And so the quality isn't there. You know, you got the top 10% that do 90% of the deals, right? Yeah. But so when it comes to looking at a property, the first thing I want to do, and I created a bunch of the content that we have up at From the Field or at freedomfarmers.com based on years of consulting. I would consult for realtors. I would consult for people who want to set up new homesteads. And people would come to me and they'd send me properties and they'd say, hey, check these out and tell us what you think, you know, eliminate them or narrow them down. And so the first thing I want to know when I'm looking for a property is, what is your context? What do you want to do on that property? And then I want to know, what are your negotiables and what are your non-negotiables? And you probably would experience the same thing in real estate for many years, is understanding what the client is willing to be flexible on and things that they will absolutely not be flexible on. That gives you the frame where you look. Then I go and batch properties, and then I look for threats immediately. So some threats that we look for are things like industrial threats, agricultural threats, climate threats. You know, are you in a hurricane zone? Are you in a tornado alley? Flood threats, any kind of externality that's outside of the property that could be a threat to you. It could even be a socioeconomic threat. Like, hey, don't buy a homestead right outside of Atlanta, Georgia. You know what I mean? So like things like that, understanding. And so what we do is we go through these 11 criteria called the 11 scales of permanence. And we go through line by line and we look at order of priority. And so number one is climate. Is because climate is the thing that can affect you the most that you have the least amount of agency over. So that's number one. Number two is the topography of the property itself. Because if you want a homestead on a property, you know, you want to grow food and raise animals and have your family there and all this, the topography's got to be good because, you know, you look at a lot of properties in, say, Wyoming or many parts of Colorado, super exposed, no trees, you're just completely exposed to the elements, not great for homesteading. Then we look at the water. What's the water like? And I say if homesteading, you need to have two sources of water, minimum two sources. So could be a drilled well, could be a pit well, could be a pond, could be a river, a stream. It could be rainwater catchment on the home. It could be a number of things. And then socioeconomics. Those four are the most important because they're the hardest to change. And then I go through a bunch of stuff. I go through access and circulation, zones of use, microclimate, soil, vegetation and wildlife. Of course, the buildings and the infrastructure and the aesthetics and the experience, kind of evaluate based on those things to come up with a holistic picture. Because most realtors, and this is why it's really hard to buy homesteads, because most realtors just don't understand the land. They're, you know, sometimes you find a realtor that has a background in farming or homesteading, and that's great. They're few and far between. Most realtors just sell single family homes and condos, right? And so they go, you go to a property with them and that's what they show you. But what I do is I look at the entire picture and I even pull the lens back to an eagle eye view on Google Earth Pro and go 60 mile radius. What's in that area that could be a threat to me or affect life on that home?
Yeah, because like you said, I mean, if you've got a great homestead, you're right outside of Atlanta. Shit goes down. Everyone in Atlanta comes heading out. Guess who's coming your way? You think you got a border crisis on the southern border? You've got a border crisis in your homestead. You got a bunch of people just mulling around trying to look for some place to be, and they've found you. So my guess is that you want to get out as far away as you can. How important? You mentioned water, multiple sources of water. How important are things like water rights? Mineral rights, what you've got in the ground itself. I mean, this starts to get into the edge of like dealing with governmental regulations, right? I mean, it's one thing when you have water and you have a well and you can just pull it all out, but it's like, what if you don't own the water rights, or what if you create a situation where the government can find something that you're not doing in compliance with them and try to go after you? Is that something that we have to keep our eyes open on?
It is. And we see, you know, with our Homestead Accelerator program, we see, of course, a preference from people looking at, you know, red states, right? Missouri is really hot right now. Arkansas is really hot. Tennessee's hot, but it's the supply is running thin. So the prices are going through the roof. All these people from California bugging out to Tennessee and with it, selling their $2 million crappy condos and then buying these nice homesteads. You do. And it's complicated because the devil's in the details, and it's always, what are the stipulations of this particular state you're in? With the U.S., it's such a mixed bag. But this is why I say, generally speaking, it's better to look at rural property. So in real estate in general, there's four categories of the way development is, right? You got urban, high density urban. You got suburban, right? Which is suburbs, you know, 2,000 square foot yard blocks, but it's fairly dense. Then you've got peri-urban, which is where most of the commercial farming happens. And then you got rural. And so I tell people there's a direct correlation between the level of tyranny you experience in the place you live based on that. Basically, from left to right, urban to rural, the more rural you get, the more free you get. So this is why we mostly show people rural properties that aren't in big agricultural zones. You want property, like this is why topography is great. This is why I love the mountains where I am, is that I'm up in the mountains and I've got a view, but nobody can really see me down below. I've got privacy. People can't just drive by my place, you know? And so I'd say the path of least resistance regarding that is just simply be out of the way so the bureaucrats aren't driving by and seeing you. And then on top of that, on the legal side of it, it's every time some asshole with a badge shows up at your property, read the thing that he sent you. And you know, one thing is only ever deal with these people in writing, never talk to them on the phone, never talk to them when they show up at your property, have a no trespassing sign on your property, have gates, you know, simple stuff. But definitely read the things that they're sending to you and you'll often find, well, what, this doesn't make any sense. What's this? And then ask questions because people are, we have this situation, of course, through hundreds of years of propaganda, where people are so intimidated by the state because they think, and you get this in the anarchist circles too, where people just think, I've had this conversation with Ed Bugos for years now, as he's always saying to me, well, the state enforces enforces things arbitrarily. And it's like, no, Ed, no, they don't. They enforce things very specific to the letter of the law. You just didn't read it. And so you got to do the homework and read the stuff and don't be intimidated by them. And don't be afraid to send them a letter asking questions because often you'll back them into a corner because this whole thing is a dog and pony show. The whole government, it's a matrix. It's a big dog and pony show. It's all based on lies. It's all based on fictions. And if we start standing up and asking questions and stop being so intimidated by these people, they back down. You know, the analogy I love is the high school locker room. You know, if you ever experienced bullying in the high school locker room. So you got the big alpha male jock who comes in, he's pushing guys around and he looks at you and the bully's looking for a victim. He's not looking for a fight, right? So when the bully comes over and pushes you, you just fucking crack him in the head right away. And then he never touches you again because, whoa, this guy, this isn't a victim. This guy's not going to put up with it. So that's how I approach these people with badges. Not in a literal sense, but I push back and I ask questions, you know?
I watched your presentation. That's kind of what I got from it is don't be intimidated. Use the law against them, right? I mean, they're the ones that are coming out and they're saying, well, this is the way it's going to be. To most definitely not take anything that they say as the absolute final play in anything, to challenge them and push back and also remember, these are bureaucrats. These are people that are not doing the thing that's the most important thing in their life. Exactly. They're at a job that they hate. You know, they're not, I want to get into, I'm passionate about being an authority figure. And, you know, I mean, nobody does all that. They take a job with the state because they know they'll never get fired. They know they can show up.
And they want a pension, right?
And they want a pension. They want to, oh, well, two more years and then I'm out of here. I get my pension, then I can leave. It's like, well, congratulations, I guess. But, I don't seem to connect with something like that, but you've done a really good job of building a nice little network of people. I would say that for people that are interested in sort of connecting with you, they're going to get classes, you know, they're going to get skills, they're going to get, you know, they're going to learn all of this, but your network of people might make it all really, really worth it. How's the network effect working for you? Because you've got people all over the world, right? That are using your system that are connected now to you and they're therefore are also connected to all of the other people in your network. This got to be the best problem solving network around, right? Because that's what you guys are all about, is finding inefficiencies with the state and fixing them. If somebody has a cop come to their house and give them some document, my guess is that you could put it out to your network of people and say, hey, is anybody having any experience dealing with something like this? And that you're going to get some answers of people that say, oh yeah, we know this trick. This is how you do it, right? So is the network, what's your network like these days?
Yeah, the network's amazing. I mean, on freedomfarmers.com, we have our own kind of private social media platform in there. And just to be clear, like my program, freedomfarmers.com, we don't get into the law on that. We're focused on land and farming and homesteading and that kind of stuff. The law is a tricky thing to teach. And there's a couple reasons for that, but maybe I'll just say that, yeah, the network is amazing. And as far as things that I've learned in the law, it's all been through meeting people. I've traveled all over the country to, I flew to Toronto one time, 5-hour flight, just to go have lunch with a guy to learn from him. And it's not easy to learn this stuff. And it's kind of a thing too, where, I don't know, I think I was telling you this in the bar when we were at Max Egan's bar. I don't know, maybe I didn't, but it's this analogy of, in that the second Matrix movie, when Neo kind of has all of his powers and he's pulling people out of the Matrix, and he has a big standoff with the big robot at the end. And the robot basically says, look, you guys can keep pulling people out, that's fine. You pull people out one at a time, that's totally fine. You go and wake up everybody, we're going to smash Zion. And so It's kind of this thing where we have to tread lightly, because you don't want to piss off the shepherd. And I really do believe that all of us can get out of this matrix. We can get out of the New World Order. We don't have to go to these gulag cities and all that, but we have to do it orderly and in single file. And it's kind of like another analogy a mentor of mine once told me. He said, imagine that the Titanic is sinking and we're all on the Titanic. And that's a metaphor for the world as we know it, Western civilization. And it's a big boat, so it takes a long time to go down, just like the Roman Empire took 500 years to collapse as we know it. And if everybody surges the lifeboats at once, it'll throw the whole boat off kilter and the whole thing goes down and everybody dies. But if we patiently, politely, and amicably get in single file and get to those lifeboats, a lot of us can get off. Not all of us will get off, but most people don't want to get off. Most people want to just go into the matrix, right? As you know. And so it's kind of like that. And so, yes, as far as the network is concerned, it's everything. And it's why I encourage people, even though I have this great online platform that people can use and connect, but we just encourage all of our members to connect in the flesh, connect in the real world, build those real world relationships. Make sure you're not spending most of your social time on social media, and make sure it's with people, and because that's where the magic happens. And I think that's where a lot of our remedy is going to come from as the New World Order continues to make the Brave New World type scenario more and more enticing for us. We're going to have to resist that and go back to some old school principles, not necessarily like the Amish, but maybe somewhere in between.
Right. Well, and in I remember you talking about that, about this, and Max Egan said something interesting sort of during his presentation as well. And people were asking about, how do you manage this process? And he said, you know, sometimes it benefits you to have one foot in the system and one foot out.
Yeah.
This idea that we're all just out of the system completely. He said, well, that's aspirational and maybe we'll get there. But as long as you're in, sometimes you kind of need, you know, if you've got one foot in, you can do the thing. You know, he's talking about like, I've got a passport. I got to get from country to country to country. So I need the passport. That doesn't mean I have to behave and follow all of the state's laws that they put forth. But I have to be strategic and smart enough and beat them at their own game. And sometimes that doesn't mean giving them the middle finger. Sometimes it means playing the game enough so that you can get things sorted out. I mean, when you guys are coming together, it feels like self-reliance is the main driver for you guys. Would that be fair to say that you're going to teach people how to take care of themselves first, you know, like put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you put it on the kids, you know, you take care of yourself first, and then that spreads out, to your family and then to your family.
Yeah. That's it, man.
And things like that
is. And it's, self-reliance. I mean, the way I think about it is agency is if you don't have agency over the things that you need to survive or live, somebody's going to leverage that agency at some point. And we saw that during COVID, right? We saw some places around the world, like in France, for example, you couldn't go to a grocery store without a vaccine ID. Now that's crazy. We never saw it that radical in Canada, and I don't think we will. But you need to have some level of agency, and that can vary, you know, in different degrees. But what it comes down to is if you understand all the things that you need to live, I focus on the four, the food, water, energy, shelter, is I think about those in a degree of dependency, a state of dependency to a state of sovereignty, and then it's everything in between. So starting at a state of dependency, you're in your apartment, you come home, you turn the lights on, they work, you know, and if they don't, well, what are you going to do about it? Nothing. And so then you can go to a state of less dependency where maybe you got a backup generator. You know, you got a solution for something in case it isn't there. Then you get to a state of security where you got some supplies of things. So food, water, energy, shelter, some level of surplus for those things. Then to a point of resiliency where now you're gardening a bit. You've got a little bit of self-replication with things. You're able to expand and grow these things to a state of sovereignty and everywhere in between. But sovereignty would be the point where, you know, I'm using that term loosely too, because the technical definition of that, I'm not using it in that regard, but just in the terms of having full agency over these things is it's a process, right? And so it's not this whole thing of zero to one, because so many people, and, you know, being an off-grid guy and I'm on YouTube and all, you see the comments like, oh, you have Starlink and you're off grid. How dare you? That's not off grid. And they expect you, if you're off grid, it means that you have, nobody knows who you are. And so you wouldn't even be commenting on my video if I was as off grid as you think I should be. And so it's basically having agency over things and controlling things. So, you know, you're going to have some bills, right? I got Starlink, but I don't have any power bills because I got my own power. The sun's shining. I got lots of solar coming in. Gardens are growing, greenhouses are planted, you know, things like this. And so it's a process, and you have to enjoy it, because if you don't like it, it's a grind, because it is work. But I love it and my kids love it. You know, we get so much personal satisfaction and education for our young kids from doing all this.
It's one of the interesting and really necessary components of Anarchapulco is when you get all these people out there from the homesteading world that come, like Jay Noon, and he's got this thing going on in the back corner called Men Camp. And you go, what is that? It sounds, is that a gay bar? You know, I mean, what's Men yeah. Camp going on? You know, what are you guys doing in the corner over there? And yeah. It's like, no, he's like, I'm doing blacksmithing. I was like, oh, like real man shit over there, right? He's like, yeah, I'm teaching these kids how to do blacksmithing. He's like, it's a little hot, you know, so we got to do it in the morning. And I thought to myself, you know, that's how you get kids into that stuff. Get them when they're kids. Have it, make it be fun, you know, if you can make that be fun.
Yeah.
Because like you said, if you associate that with work and you don't really love it, then it feels like a grind. Then it feels like the worst job you've ever had, you know, where it's like, I can never get off this conveyor belt. I'm going to be on here forever, because as long as I live out here. So is that part of what you guys work on, is getting people, you got to get people in the right frame of mind, right? But in order to do this is not for everybody, but I mean, it should be, but of course we understand making that move, as you said, like from the city to the suburbs, to the next level, to the rural, you know, that is a process. And I don't know if everybody can just go city to rural right off the bat, but if you can at least commit to making a step in that direction, you get your mentality right. Is that the first step?
Exactly it. Yeah, it is. It is. And so much, you know, just as like, for example, having 30 days of stored food is huge, because it can get you through that blip where you can't leave the home, you know, and you think about some kind of proverbial societal collapse and how it could go, you know, watch every zombie apocalypse movie ever made and see how it goes, is there's going to be sort of a 3 to 7 day period where there's a real shakedown as people are freaking out and panicking. If you're stuck in a city during that time, you want to just hunker down. In my opinion, you just want to stay put, keep the doors closed, keep the windows closed. You got enough food and water in there. Maybe, If the septic's turned off, or if the sewer service is turned off, you got another way to take care of business. But you have some way to get through, and then you've got something like, say, a bug out bag, where now you can just, okay, wait till the opportune time, and then you can bug out. You can go somewhere. So it's not necessarily about getting everybody off grid, because that's just not realistic. That's not going to happen, right? And I'm not a utopian as far as thinking of things that need to work for everybody. I don't really care about everybody, to be honest, at this point.
Oh,
when I see all these people still getting wrapped up in the Trump thing, and I'm just going, oh my goodness. You know, when are you guys going to join us and realize that this is all just a dog and pony show? But, you know, it's about taking steps and making sure that you've got some agency over those things when the time comes. And then maybe there's a time later in your life where being off grid and farming might accommodate you. But I realize that there's no way everybody can do this. But what we try to focus on is showing people the real deal and not sugarcoating it, showing you what's really involved and showcasing all the things that need to be done. You know, whether we're teaching people about holistic land management with animals on farming on large acreages, or we're talking about microgreens, we really just get into the details and empower people with the information, because, you know, so much of this stuff comes down to, if you're just doing it as a hobby, it's hard to really take it too much further. If you can make an income or supplement your income with it, it can really make a big deal for you. And so that's how I've always kind of front loaded with that information first, help people become a little bit more autonomous with the way they make a living. And then that hopefully stacks into more of a holistic lifestyle on the land.
Did you talk to Marjorie Wildcraft when she was in Mexico?
Oh yeah. Me and Marjorie were hanging out all the time. Absolutely.
She's the best. She's awesome. Recorded with her. We always talk about microgreens because it seems like it's something that people that are limited in their space, if they're living in an apartment or a condo somewhere in a city, you say, get out of the city. And they say, well, that's easier said than done. But in the absence of that, maybe you can generate a little bit of extra food in the form of microgreens. You guys have
absolutely
that, right?
That's one of our biggest courses are in microgreens, because there's such a, I call them a gateway crop. You know, it's it's an easy way to get into farming with very little infrastructure, very little upfront capital, and you can make money at it right away. And so a thing I've encouraged, I mean, I've taught so many thousands of people now, even in my travels outside of the online courses, is that microgreens are such a great way to start farming as an enterprise in general, because there's very few things you can do in business, let alone farming, that can give you a cash return in 7 days. And so microgreens can do that, a 7-day turnaround. And so you can start something in your garage, in your spare room, in your basement, in a small greenhouse, and you can start making money right away. This allows you to meet customers, get the word out there, build social equity with people in your community, get some money coming in, reinvest that money, put that into other enterprises. You know, farming becomes a kind of a fun game of Lego stacking if you start with something like microgreens, because you can get cash flow so quickly. But a lot of other systems in agriculture require more capital and more time and just more resources in general, or more land. Microgreens barely require any of those four things, but they allows you to bring money in and then start stacking. Okay, I got a good customer base with microgreens now, are making $2,000 a week. Hey, we might want to start thinking about getting the kids involved in another enterprise on the farm. Let's start a market garden. Okay, we can go lease some land. We don't even need to buy that land. We could go lease it and get it happening. And that's how I started. I started as a modular farmer, just farming on land I didn't own, just renting, and getting the skills, building the social equity. I don't know if you're familiar with the 8 forms of capital, but it's a really liberating way to think about capital. Is in terms of, we all know what financial capital is, money, different types of money, social capital, relationships, educational capital, information, things that you know, experiential capital, your experiences, family capital, health capital, biological capital. There's many forms of capital. And when you really start to think about the holistic picture of wealth, you can go, hey, you know what? I can leverage this thing to get this, and I can leverage this to get that. And when you start to have this viewpoint of the world and resources and human interactions, you can actually realize that you're a lot richer than you think you are. And I really try to encourage people to look into the 8 forms of capital. I say there's 10 now. I added 2, health and family. And really think about your wealth and your life in that holistic picture, and you'll find that you're far more resourceful and richer than you think. Because if you only focus on money, which is what the bankers want you to do, right? They want you to think only in terms of money and finance. That way they control it. But the rich know this. This is why they don't hold money. They buy assets, right? All you need to do is read Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, to learn that. But that's the kind of the picture that I like to paint for people and encourage people to think things through in.
Yeah. And on a side note, I don't know if you know this or not, but Marjorie Wildcraft got her start working for Robert Kiyosaki for years and years and years.
She did tell me that briefly. Yes. That's so funny. She's an interesting woman, man.
And he's buddies with Berwick too.
That's right. Apparently they had a little falling out when I thought Berwick said, "Aren't you an anarchist?" And Kiyosaki got really offended by that or something.
Maybe. Jeff likes to mess with people a little bit.
Yeah, he does.
Pushed him a little farther than you could. What about the reality? Like, at what stage do you need to be before you start introducing animals? Because Marjorie and I were talking about, she's saying, you know, listen, some hens that lay eggs is a pretty good, you know, source of, let's just talk about calories here. You know, we're talking about,
yes,
this is the math behind how many eggs they produce. It takes them a little while. You get a group of six of them, they produce this. And you talked about revenue from microgreens. Is this another one where you go, well, I get to a point where I've got more eggs than I can eat. And now, yes, therefore, I've got items that I can sell. Is that the stackable part that you put on top of the microgreens?
Yep, it could be. Yeah, eggs are a fairly easy one to stack in. Having said that, organic feed is so expensive these days that if you don't have land, because chickens need three things. They need grains, greens, and grubs, basically in three parts. And so most people are just feeding their chickens the grains and the greens. So they giving them feed that they buy, which is expensive. If you ferment it, you can get about three times the value out of it. But if you don't have area for your chickens to graze and move around on, they're only going to get some of those greens and grubs. You know, you might give them your compost scraps and whatnot. So I find if you have land, yes. I mean, we have courses on raising pastured birds and moving them around on the land. And yes, it's an amazing, with mobile coops, it's an amazing way to raise chickens. And chickens are probably the first animal you want to get into because they're the easiest. Eggs for sure. And then meat birds are quite easy too, if you don't mind butchering them. And I was a vegan vegetarian for 16 years. And I'll tell you, when I first went to do that, I was pretty rattled, but now I've done it a few times and it's not that big of a deal. It's quite easy. It's way easier than butchering any other type of animal, that's for sure. And so, yeah, you might get into something like that. But chickens aren't that much work that you could stack in a vegetable operation fairly easily as well. So I might be enticed to look at that for somebody if they had some land. You know, you could be on 1 or 2 acres of farmland and you could run a pretty diversified farm with the mixed vegetables and chickens and maybe some meat birds and microgreens. You know, that's a year-round farm in most climates. And it's a problem. I mean, I used to make, on a quarter acre of land, we used to bring in $100,000 of revenue in an 8 month growing season, 10 month growing season.
Wow.
Yeah. And then that's growing high value vegetables, you know, very specialized salad greens, baby root vegetables, cherry tomatoes, microgreens. Microgreens were the thing we would do year round. But, you know, for the most part, our season was 8 to 10 months. But, you know, farming can be profitable if you know what you're doing. And if we've got so much good content out there now that you can really start strong. When I was getting into all this stuff, it was, the information wasn't there as much. It was a lot harder to get started back then. But now, you know, we've got so much good content out there that people can really start strong.
Well, I think that one of the places that people need to go is probably, you know, to your website and at least see what's cooking there, because the idea that you know, I don't know how to do this. And I'm pretty good. I'm good at saying that. When it comes to technical stuff, I go, I don't know how to do this. When it comes to farming stuff, I don't know how to do it. Well, it's true. I don't know how to do it, but I can always learn, right? And then you guys have put together these courses. I mean, you guys have a real, like, God, you know, between you and your courses, talking to Marjorie and her courses, talking to Richard Grove at Autonomy.
Yeah.
I think I would I think I would tell kids to skip college.
Absolutely.
I would tell them to just get, you know, take some time and learn how to do these courses, you know, maybe pick a half a dozen from you and a couple from Marjorie and a couple from Richard and go out there and like build a skill set that's actually valuable. Yeah. You don't get the degree that you hang,
yeah,
the diploma
cares?
That you hang on the wall or whatever. Who cares? I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, I don't know how much this changes, but I have applied for many jobs over the years. I've never ever had one person tell me to actually bring in my college diploma to show them. So I could have been lying about it the whole time. I wasn't, but I could have been. But these days it seems like skills are the way to go. What,
absolutely.
What do you guys have planned for the rest of this year? I mean, where are you guys going? What's happening over with your network? Because it seems like, now for the first time in a long time, people are actually starting to recognize that we have a serious problem and that they might need to be proactive about this. And if I had to sum up what macroaggressions, the theme of it all is being proactive as opposed to reactive. And
yes.
If you recognize that we've got these problems, and we clearly do, if you see them and you know that you see them and you trust your judgment and you recognize that they're coming your way, get out of the way. Right. Or be proactive and have whether that's money put away, or in your case, you could teach people how to have revenue streams coming in that they didn't count on before. And that'll change their lives. Is that where do we go from here with the tail half this year?
Oh, man, we're so on the same page. Yeah. I think it's all about being proactive. And we're just trying to showcase those skills for people. I mean, that's my lane is agriculture, homesteading, off-grid living and whatnot. And so, giving people the tools they need to be proactive, because, you know, there's a lot of solutions out there, and I'm not going to sit here and say that this is the only way, you know, it's not. There's other ways to do things, and there's other solutions for people. Everybody can't be a farmer. I recognize that. But yeah, I think it on a real macro level, to no pun intended for your podcast, but it is to be completely proactive. The days of just sitting back and mailing it in are over. I can't wait for this whole Trump thing to just blow over so people can finally wake up and realize this guy's not coming to save you. But that's where I'm at is getting people on the land. And that's why I built my Finding the Perfect Homestead Property course, was to basically show people how they can figure this out. Because making a real estate purchase, as you know, is probably one of the biggest decisions you'll make in your life. You know, after, say, getting married and having kids or something, buying a property, if it's going to be the place that you live, especially if it's the place you homestead, is one of the most important decisions you'll make. And so many people get it wrong because they see the wrong, they don't see the things. They don't identify the threats, right? And so I'm really just out here beating the drum of get out of the cities, you know, get agency over your resources as best you can. You'll find that out of the cities, it's really cool. Like I think the small towns are having a resurgence. I think there's a bit of a renaissance happening in small communities. During COVID, it was crazy. We had in our little town here, we had meetings every single week, private meetings when everybody was locked down. We were about 100 people every single week would get together and just talk and socialize and hug and shake hands and network. And we had 500 people coming in out of those meetings in our tiny little area where there's maybe 4,000 people in this area. And it was great. And so that's another example of being proactive. Like, get out there. Don't just sit here and get depressed about the latest thing Klaus Schwab has to say. Get out there and do something about it. And so, you know, that's my thing, is talking about farming. You know, there's other things out there, but that's where I'm at, is get people on the land, get them out of the city, get agency over your resources, and start looking at your whole life through the lens of 10 forms of capital, and start thinking about what does real wealth mean? It isn't just dollars and cents. It's all these other things.
Well, it used to be 8 forms of capital, but now with inflation, it's 10 forms. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Listen, yeah. Man, I mean, nobody's going to, you're going to have to do it for yourself. You're going to have to recognize that you know, the first step of taking care of the problem is recognizing that you have a problem. And I think we recognize we have a problem with our governments, be it the Canadian government, the American government, or whichever government you out there are listening to and living under, you know that they all sort of think the same way. It's not it's not human centric, and they certainly do not care about you. So if you're sitting around waiting for Trump or daddy government or whoever to come and fix the problems that they themselves created, well, that seems like a really poor strategy to me. I think that one of the things that you can do is get honest about your situation. What's the best place for people to find you and to support your work and get on board with all this stuff?
Yeah. So freedomfarmers.com, that's the platform where we make all these courses and have our Homestead Accelerator directory and all that, our private network and whatnot. I'm on X now. I joined back. I was really never on Twitter, but I went on there in June. I kind of like it. I enjoy following you, and I'm on there. People can find me at Off-Grid Stone. And I'm still on YouTube, though I'm shadow banned like crazy. I've got over 500,000 subscribers, and I'm lucky to get 10,000 views on my videos. Do the math on that. Doesn't make any sense, but I'm still there. I still post there. I'm also mirrored on Rumble and Odyssey. So if you just search, Off-Grid with Curtis Stone on any three of those, you'll find me.
That's Curtis Stone, everybody. He's trying to help you out. Why won't you just listen to him? He's trying to give you the keys to the kingdom. If you just use, you're going to have to make the decision to take it yourself. But if you do, and if you are serious about getting yourself put in a position where you're going to be a little bit more self-sustainable, you can take care of things, freedomfarmers.com. It's a pretty good place to start. And if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can connect with me through the website, macroaggressions.io. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.